And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. I'm Kristen, and on season two, I'm joined by legendary rock star Patty Quatro, where we take a deep dive into her Detroit roots, the indelible impact of her iconic musical family, her two pioneering all-female bands, The Pleasure Seekers and Cradle, hanging with her homeboys in Detroit Rock City, and so much more. So let's get started.
I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say? Don't you treat me this away, 'cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care if you do, 'cause it's understood. You ain't got no money, you just ain't no good.
Well, I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go.
That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Patty, on the previous episode, there were some things that we ended with that I really want to pick up on, which is you're now the Pleasure Seekers. You're touring around Michigan, outside of Detroit, as well as in Detroit. Your brother, Mickey, is the person responsible for booking you at all these gigs. You're starting to really get some great attention, but you are still underaged. But your father and the way he raised you, being independent, you went to these gigs on your own. You lugged your own gear, unless you could convince some gropey of yours to bring it in. And you're even allowed to go stay in motels if you need to on your own. But now the Pleasure Seekers are starting to tour outside of the state. And you're starting to get a lot of recognition, even though that was happening locally. And now your dad thinks it's time for you, the band, to get a manager. So tell us how all of that started to unfold. And I believe that you talked about that it started with a lineup change. So tell us about the lineup change in the band.
Yes. You know, you got to remember, this is an era that the girls were a novelty thing. So there were a lot of people. The word was getting out. And everybody wanted to have a girl band at their thing. They had heard we were good and all that. And Diane Baker, our keyboard player, was in college. Her boyfriend gave her an ultimatum, you know, it's the band or me, you know, because it was taking too much time. And Chris Winslow came in on keys. And then we had Mary Lou's parents said, okay, enough of this. It was fun and all that, you know, you're back in school. And they talked her into leaving, and she didn't fight it that much. It's interesting. For Mary Lou, it wasn't that big of a deal. Okay, Mom, you know, is she, but Nan, they wanted her to stop too. And she absolutely refused. She was, I mean, she lied to them. She bought her own drum set, kept it at college. And she continued playing. And at one point they came to visit her on a surprise, and she was loading up her drums and the shit hit the fan.
Oh no.
Oh my God. They made her quit. They took the drums, and she never got over it. It was a sad story. For years, we would talk about it. We remained friends through our whole life. And Nan never got over being pulled out of that band. She became a psychologist and, you know, had a career in that, but had a divorce. She lost that passion. She was so passionate about the drums. And it was a really sad, sad thing because she had been with us from the beginning.
That's heartbreaking. And I think that's also, you know, for people who might think, well, why didn't she just say to her parents, I'm doing this anyway? It was a very different time back then.
Completely, completely. And her parents were real strong-minded on that. Like I said, they were a fairly rich family, and the father was a big executive at Ford. And, you know, her mother was real strong. I mean, she just didn't want it continuing. I think she saw that it was going to get serious, and she had a different viewpoint for her daughter. Women, you know, buttoned up, pigeonholed, you know, they just didn't do a girl band. So,
well, and it's also interesting to bring Detroit and now Ford, in this case, back into it, because here was a man who was thriving as an executive.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So why would you ever reject the car industry for them when the family had money? And here was Nan, not necessarily trying to reject that, but she was certainly rejecting her role as a woman, or a young woman at the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Culture. Completely. Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. And then Diane actually came back at the end of college when we had to record What a Way to Die and Never Thought You'd Leave Me. She came back in, and Pris was pretty pissed. You know, she was in, out, in, I mean, back and forth. And then Diane left again because she had to go back to college. So she was there for the record. And then that was the end of Diane. You know, she pretty much left. And then my dad suggested Arlene. Now, picture this. Arlene is a married woman with a couple kids, you know, three kids, in fact, you know, a few years older than us. It was like, we're like, huh, Dad, what are you thinking? You know, and she had her own style of dressing and stuff. She was in an older generation with the Elvis Presley stuff, right? That was when she was a teenager. So it was like, what are we going to do? And we had to hip her up. So she had not good hairdos and everything. I mean, we had to change her entire look.
I just want to clarify, because not everybody yet is as familiar with your family as they soon will be. But Arlene is your oldest sister.
Yes.
Okay. So how did you hip her up? How did that happen?
We changed her whole hairdo, got it long. She became the Pamela Sue Anderson of the band. I mean, guys would put her picture on their MySpace site. She was gorgeous and sexy, and she played the organ and moved. And I mean, she was really fun to watch, very sensual. She grabbed onto it, man. Once she got in and got herself together, she was loving it because she had actually gotten married too young. She ended up marrying her best friend, and the marriage ended up divorcing. She had kids and everything. It was a horrible, sad thing, but she ended up, you know, I'm just not into it. So they ended up parting eventually, but he was our manager for years. When we started traveling all, he ended up working for Alice Cooper later when they divorced. So he was very good, very intelligent. He knew what to do. And, God.
I love these connections. So Arlene's former husband ends up managing Alice Cooper, and yet your brother Mickey had turned down managing Alice Cooper.
Oh, yeah. He made fun of it. He said, who are these guys with their chickens and blood? And yeah, he just thought it was the stupidest thing he'd ever seen. And later he said, God, what was my head doing? You know?
Well, but somehow it's still all kept in the family, somehow.
Yeah, well, he booked them. Yeah, he booked them all over. Yeah, it was funny. And we rehearsed at their place. So, and Susie toured with him later. That was the tour she did in the U.S. with him.
Yes.
Nightmare Tour, I think it was called. Anyway, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I remember I could tell one story that was really something. Can I jump forward for a second?
Please, don't ever ask.
An amazing story, because it'll come later how we signed with a major record company and a promotion company. Okay. That'll come in as we go on. But once in that band, we were playing in New Jersey. We had been booked into a club. We had our ID and all that. Susie had this guy that was after her, a mafia guy again. You know, they always went for this little cute with black hair, you know, she played the bass. And so he was always hanging around in New York, New Jersey, wherever. He lived with his mother, and he was a mob guy, go figure. And we're playing at the bar, and it was behind the bar that the equipment was all set up. And a bunch of punks came in from another territory of mobs, right? And they were like, oh, picking us off. Yeah, I'm going to have that one. I'm going to have that one. They were going through each girl, which one they were going to get with, you know? And the poor bar owner, he didn't know what the hell to do. Leo pulled us aside. He said, Susie, you're going to have to act your ass off. Tell them you're not feeling well. Say, we'll come back and party tomorrow night. You know, I can't wait. And put on a whole act just so we get you out of here. And they bought it. Somehow they bought it. We jumped in the car after the gig and we went back to the hotel and Leo stayed back. We were scared he'd be bloody coming home or get beat up or something. So the next day comes, we go back to the bar. The entire bar is cleaved in half. The whole bar is ruined. And the only thing left standing was our equipment safe. And Charlie, the mob guy, told us later, I told them, what you going to do? Destroy these girls? You know, they did nothing to you. Leave their equipment alone. You know, wreck the rest if you want, but don't touch their stuff. So they listened to him and they didn't touch it. So we call our agent, our promoter, ABC Booking, and we told him what happened. Leo was in a rage about it. How could you book us in there? Da, 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 all the stuff that had happened. And he said, okay, let me take care of it. He called Leo back later and he said one line. I'll never forget it. He said, don't worry. Those punks will never bother anyone else again. I mean, they had him, they knocked him off. And the bar owner.
I'm completely overwhelmed. And since this is audio for everyone,
this happened.
My jaw is on the floor, and that's why you're hearing the silences. Wait, go back for 1 second. So he says, I promise you, these guys will never bother you again.
Don't bother anyone. That was the wording. They will never bother anyone again.
And you knew that meant they were offed?
Yeah, they were offed. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. That was the era. There was the mob. There was music. There was the cars. You know, all this was going on in the United States. And especially Detroit had its mob element.
Absolutely. LA as well. That I know from my dad. So it's sex, drugs, mob, and rock and roll.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's crazy. I have another one too, if you want me to.
Of course, please.
Okay. It was the summer of love, right? Hey, Dashbury, you know, all the hippies and the tie-dyes and everything. And in Detroit, it was the summer of love. We had Plum Street and all that. But it was called the summer of hate in Detroit. All the activism had exploded. This was, Wayne was real into it. Wayne Kramer, the MC5, they were in it. We weren't. We weren't political. We were encapsulated in my family's musical bubble, you know, and we lived in a different area of town. But all this was going on. The activism, the racial stuff was huge. The police went in and raided a bar, and it exploded into the riots of 67. It was horrible. My dad, we would see on TV people on the roof, the snipers looking for the people. They were the police. They were going to shoot them. And they were marching and coming, and buildings were burning all over Detroit. And they were marching toward Grosse Pointe, too. My dad flipped out. He said, we're leaving. We're going to come to the gig with you. You know, he wanted to come with us, him and mom. And he boarded up the house and everything. We didn't even know if we'd come back to a house because, I mean, they were getting close on Jefferson and marching in. Scary shit.
Thank you. got the blues. Yeah, it look like everything I do is gonna lose. And nothing but the bad time, baby. Yeah, I can't go on this way. Number on my bed. You know how that can drive me. Yeah, drive me so crazy. Don't you be my stroller. Yeah, baby, 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 baby. I just want you to leave me.